Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What's up, football fans, and welcome back to another episode of the NFL Whip Around. I'm Jeff Hartman, joined by Coach KT Smith. Coach, post-Super Bowl, what's up?
Post-Super Bowl, but great day because I love talking about the Super Bowl. Sad day because football is officially over, and now we have to...
It doesn't end, though. This is just the beginning. Now we get the off-season speculation and free agency. This is just the beginning.
That's true. And we get the United Football League in the spring, whatever the heck that is.
I'm not watching that. But hey, the most important thing here is, what did you think about the halftime show? Did you watch it?
I'll tell you what, man. I told you before, I had about 25 people at our house a party. The 40-something-year-old moms, man, you would have thought they were back in the club in the 90s. They were rocking with Usher, man. So,
I told my wife, she does not really care about football, but she'll watch the Super Bowl. I said Usher was a great pick because he bridges some gaps in terms of, you know, your age demographic, my age demographic. He's been doing this a long time. Now, the younger people might not know him as well, but Usher, I thought he did a good job. He actually sang, which was interesting. I actually thought that was good. But let's talk about football. Let's talk about football. The title of this, and the first topic, and I'm anxious to know what you think. Was this Super Bowl a stud or a dud? Because honestly, there were times where this game sucked. I thought the first half was awful. It was sloppy. It was ugly. Turnovers galore. No one was doing anything of any. And some people are like, well, it's just a defensive grudge match. Yeah, the offenses also look like crap. Where do you stand on this, Coach? Stud or dud?
Yeah, it's good. This is going to be a tough one to evaluate when people do their rankings of great Super Bowls, because some people are going to say instant classic, you know, longest Super Bowl ever, walk off, all that great stuff. But I'm with you. The first half was tough to watch. Yeah. Just the mistakes. I mean, the Chiefs played about as poorly as I've seen the Chiefs play in a long time. Sometimes really good defensive football can muck a game up. And I haven't watched the All-22 yet. It's not out, but I'm suspecting that when I watch it, you're not going to see open receivers anywhere. I think both defenses really had a great game plan and a great understanding of what the opposing offenses wanted to do. And they made it hard on those offenses. And then the offenses compounded it with just some bad football. So from the fourth quarter and the overtime, that was awesome. That was compelling to watch. But yeah, you had to slog through three quarters to get there.
Well, you're talking about Christian McCaffrey putting the ball on the turf. Your boy, Isaiah Pacheco, putting the ball on the turf.
Yeah.
Mahomes throwing an interception. Like, my gosh, what is going on? Like, this is the Super Bowl, and I know things can get tight and they can get tense. Anyone that tells me instant classic, you can say the ending was an instant classic, but the game itself, no, far from it. I wouldn't even have this game in its entirety in my top 10 list. I could easily rattle off 10 better Super Bowls right now than I would say this. The ending was great, but even the ending, there was drama, but I don't know about you. I knew they were going to score. Did you get that feeling too?
Not as much, only because Kansas City had not been consistent throughout the game. Right. Obviously, you're thinking Mahomes. But hey, the way they played, you could easily see where, you know, Mahomes throws a great pass to a receiver and then he gets the ball knocked out and boom, game's over there. You know, I didn't trust Kansas City to execute cleanly all 11 guys, you know. So, but yeah, if they were clean, then sure, Mahomes was going to take him down the field.
Do you think, let me ask you this before we go to our next topic. If Jake Moody's extra point isn't blocked, do you think that the Chiefs eventually score a touchdown to win it all? Like that Patrick Mahomes knows what I got to do. I know what I got to do. I'm going to get it done. Do you think that's the case? Or do you think that it would, it's not going down like that?
Ooh, I don't know. It's very butterfly effect. So, yeah, that's a great question. I don't know, man. At what point did Mahomes like simply become Mahomes in that game? I mean, he just, as he got a feel for things, he really started to get better and better. I thought Andy Reid's play calling got better and better. Now, if Moody makes that extra point, does it increase that sense of urgency? I mean, are those just two guys that are at their absolute best when the pressure is utmost? So, you know, maybe that's the case too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll talk about Patrick Mahomes a little bit. But I want to ask you about the second topic, which is the overtime. It's the first Super Bowl to go to overtime since they changed the rules, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, both teams are guaranteed a possession no matter what. Even if a team scores a touchdown, unlike when Tom Brady brought the Patriots all the way back from 28-3, they score on the touchdown on the opening drive. Falcons never touch the football. That's changed. That is correct. My interpretation of the rule is correct, yes?
Yep.
Yes, all right. Sir. So Kyle Shanahan wins the toss, and he elects to take the football. There's a lot of people out there that said, wrong, wrong, wrong. You want to kick it off, and then you get to know what you have to do based on the result. What do you think? Did he make the right decision by taking the football or not?
Yeah, I get his logic. His logic, his argument for why he took the ball was because he said in our calculations, the third possession was going to be key because – if both teams either, you know, both teams wind up with the same number of points after the first two possessions, you go to that third possession and now it's sudden death. And essentially he said, we wanted to guarantee that when it got to a third possession, we would be the ones with the opportunity to win that sudden death situation. And that makes sense. If you're convinced that you're going to get to the third possession, which entails you stopping Patrick Mahomes in some way, shape or form. And I think that was the dangerous thing there, that by you taking the ball first, you're allowing Mahomes to know and Reed to know what they have to do. And in essence, you're giving them the luxury of an extra down. Whereas with San Francisco, they get into a fourth down there on their opening possession and they opt to kick the field goal. I mean, if they're in the other scenario, then they're going to go for it, obviously, on fourth down. They get themselves the extra down. So it's hard to really bang on Kyle Shanahan for that decision because there's a lot that goes into it. And no coach in the history of the NFL has had to make that exact decision before. So, you know, Eggman, maybe he trusted his defense. Maybe he felt like the metrics were in his favor.
Yeah. I mean, you're hedging your bets. Well, congratulations. You did a good job there, but
I could have just been like, I don't know.
No, it's a fine line. I love that you said no coach has ever been in this position. So when people are getting ready to hammer Kyle Shanahan and say, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, no one has done it before. You know, this happened after the Bills and Chiefs playoff game is the year after that is when they changed the rule on overtime to make sure that every team gets a possession. The more I think about it, the more I think if I were in that situation now, in hindsight, it's 2020, I would have kicked the ball away. I would have kicked the ball away, and that gives you a lot of information as well. You hope your defense gets a stop. All you need is a field goal to win it, and there you go. But if they go down and kick a field goal, now you have the luxury, like you said, of the extra down. But I want to get your thoughts on the fact that there were some players on both sides, let's be fair, that didn't even know the rule. How do you not know this rule? How do you not prepare your team? You have 2 weeks to say, hey, guys, listen, remember, but this is a playoff rule. This isn't just a Super Bowl. How do you not go over this the last 3 weeks and say, remember, if we go to overtime, both teams get a possession. Coach, please explain how some players on this roster didn't know this.
You'd be surprised, but some players don't know. And I shared a text with you earlier where, you know, talking about an NFL coach who had told me that he just it's amazing the number of things that players are not aware of. I think it's interesting because while Shanahan and his staff seem to have made a lot of calculations internally, there may not have been a very good job on their part of expressing that strategy to the team. Sometimes as a coaching staff, you think, hey, there's things we need to know as far as our approach, but maybe we don't need to share those things with the team, or maybe we just forget. Maybe you just forget to map it all out distinctly. And in that instance, like I know with our overtime situation in high school, we just make sure that our guys know that the rules are different. I mean, we start from the 25 and play in from there the way that they do in college. But the calculations are interesting. I'll go back real quick to what we were just talking about. The calculations are similar. We know that both teams are going to get a possession, and so we always want to be on defense first. And when you think about Shanahan's decision, if he leans back, if he leans in on the way that they do it in high school and college, then that's the move. So when you said, you know, you're leaning towards him kicking off, that's the standard play at the lower levels when you know both teams are getting a possession.
There you go. I think that makes sense. And so it's going to be really interesting how that, I don't know, it's going to be second guessed, but again, no one has done it yet. And so I think that's important to note. Let's go to the next topic, which I think is a good segue. When you think about this game after the fact, do you think that the Chiefs won it or did the Niners lose it? Because on Monday morning, I was on with the great Hondo Carpenter, who's been on your Call Sheet podcast before. He was in attendance. He covered the Super Bowl for Sports Illustrated. And he said, bluntly, the Niners lost the game. He didn't think the Chiefs won it. The Niners lost it, whether it was getting away from the run when they were breaking off 6-7 yards a clip sometimes with Christian McCaffrey, or whether it were the turnovers. He said, I think the Niners lost it. You agree with him or do you disagree?
I lean a little bit in that direction. I don't want to discredit Kansas City for being who they needed to be when the game was on the line. I mean, clearly the Chiefs played their best football late, but they wouldn't have been in that position if San Francisco didn't open the door. I thought San Francisco's decision coming out of halftime, they went 3-and-out on 3 straight possessions. They had a 10-3 lead that turned into a 13-10 deficit in part because they couldn't move the ball. And on those 3 3-and-outs, they ran one time. They threw the ball 8 out of 9 plays. And I think that was a mistake, especially when Steve Spagnuolo made the decision at halftime to ramp up the blitz, man. He played a lot of zone in the first half. San Francisco executed fairly well against it, and he went man in the second half, and he started bringing people. And that's what he did to Lamar Jackson to great effect. I think it was effective against Brock Purdy as well. I also think that there were other instances other than overtime, you know, the overtime rules, or maybe San Francisco wasn't as prepared as they needed to be. I'm shocked that Kansas City was able to run that same play for the winning touchdown that they had run against Philadelphia in the twice for touchdowns the year before. And San Francisco was completely and utterly unprepared for it. They had no idea how to adjust. When you run that same that winning play back, you just see San Francisco not know how to check it. They didn't. They had, you know, 3 guys in a bunch. They brought a dude in motion. They whipped them back into the flat. San Francisco started to bump it, and then they had no idea who should be covering who. And that's inexcusable, given that same play was the winning touchdown in last year's Super Bowl.
And that was a play that you talked about last week when you said about wrinkles. You mentioned that one play, and I was like, man, that's the play. That's the play Coach described on our whip around. Okay, I want to ask you a couple questions that aren't on our topic list. First and foremost, as a head coach, if you're coaching a team and you're down 7-0 and one of your players comes up and does what Travis Kelce did to Andy Reid, what's your reaction as a head coach?
My players aren't multimillionaires dating the world's biggest pop star. So I have a lot more latitude in how I can react. But that was fairly shocking, wasn't it? To see,
yes, it was
very uncharacteristic because Travis Kelce, you know, I mean, he plays with emotion, but you've never seen any kind of sort of sideline outburst from him like that before. I think Andy Reid might have been as stunned as much as any other emotion.
Your inclination is you can sit your ass down for the rest of the game if you're going to act like this. We're only down 7-0. It's the first quarter. What is your deal? That was me watching. I'm like, what is his problem? Like, it's not fourth quarter, 3 minutes left. You're down by 10 and frustration is boiling over. The game had just started. I don't understand that at all. It was just really, really interesting to me how that went. But
I believe he was angry because he was off the field on the play where Pacheco fumbled. And he, you know, I think as an amateur lip reader, it was like, keep me on the field is basically what he was yelling. But I think Andy Reid would have loved to have disciplined him in that moment. I also think Andy Reid understood this is the damn Super Bowl. I gotta keep him on the field. And so whatever issue that they're going to handle, they're going to handle it after the game.
There's no issue. They won the freaking Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it's your party. How many people were there was kind of clouding the noise level. I want to ask what your thoughts are on Tony Romo and his call of the game. I have my own thoughts. I want to get your thoughts on Romo as a color guy.
I mean, yeah, honestly, I didn't hear a lot of it because there were a lot of people there, but most people left after the third quarter. Is they're heading home with their kids and things like that. So I got to hear most of the fourth and all of the overtime. The last play was horrendous. I mean, CBS botched the last play horrendously. That should be a legendary call, right? You know, like if you're, especially if you're the play-by-play guy, like you need Tony Romo to get the hell out of your way and let you call it and then shut up and let everybody just sort of like, you know, like, I mean, silence when a big thing happens like that and the celebration is occurring, silence is the best move just to let the viewer take in, get a little bit of a feel for, you know, what the players are experiencing, et cetera. And Romo babbled through all of that. They didn't run a replay for like 2 minutes after. My wife was like, run the replay so we can see what happened. But they couldn't because Romo was blah, blah, blah. You know, so I thought he really botched that.
I'm not a Romo fan. The only thing that Romo did that I liked was he talked about Spagnuolo. He goes, he's not going to go down without sending the house. He said he is going to blitz Brock Purdy because even if they get burned, you get Patrick Mahomes back on the football field sooner with more time. And so that was like, okay, that's a good call. I never thought of it that way. Other than that, I mean, it was a constant state of, I'm going to go for it here, Jim. I'll tell you what, hey, Jim, it's fourth down. I'm going to go for it. And even Jim Nance, who's a golfer, he's a golf guy. He's like, I don't know, Tony, I'd probably take the points here. And they kick the field goal and they move on with their lives because it was the right decision. Tony Romo's shtick is getting a little old with me. I think there's a lot of better color guys. Tony Romo's first year was pretty cool. He's calling plays before it happened. Now he just kind of seems more unprepared than anything else. I saw a really strong article written about, I think it was the Washington Post, about how Romo and Nance have been ripped for being CBS's number one crew and they're paying Romo all this money. So I just want to get your take on that. And then I love Jim Nance. Obviously, as a golfer, I love Jim Nance, but we'll see. Let's talk about Patrick Mahomes here on the next topic.
Well, real quick, can I interrupt for 1 second?
Yeah, go for it.
How are you going to feel 2 years from now when Tom Brady's calling the Super Bowl?
I think it's next year, isn't it?
Next year?
He's taking over the number one crew on Fox from Greg Olson. I love Greg Olson. I think Greg Olson's really good.
I think he's very good as well, yeah.
I actually think Tom Brady will be pretty good too.
Okay.
Because I don't think Tom Brady's going to try, if he's smart and if his agent's smart, like, look, you don't want to do what Romo's doing. Just give your analysis. Like, that's all Greg Olson does. He doesn't go over and beyond. I like Kirk Herbstreit because, like you said, they'll shut up and they'll let the play go. They'll let the play-by-play guy do their job. Then they'll add the color when it's time for the color. Romo tries to do everything. He tries to do everything, and it's just too much. It's over the top. But, yeah, Tom Brady, I don't know. I'll see how that looks. I like Greg Olson, though. But, yeah. Okay, let's go about Patrick Mahomes. He's been a starter in the at the quarterback position for 6 years. In that time, he's been to 6 AFC championship games, 4 Super Bowls. He's won 3 of them. He's been crowned the most valuable player twice. He's entering the conversation as one of the best to ever play the position. Where do you put him in that regard. What say you, Coach?
Oof, yeah, this is a great one, man. I just think that, first of all, that resume alone, I don't know if there's a better first 6 years in the history of the league. I would have to do some research, but I mean, 6-for-6 in championship games, 4 Super Bowl appearances, 3 Super Bowl wins in your first 6 years. That's pretty awesome. So I'm not ready. I think the resume is still incomplete. I'm not ready to put him up there yet with some of these guys that did it consistently for 14, 15 years. There's a lot of those guys. But I think that, you know, he is heading. I can't see any fall off in his play. So unless there is some sort of injury that really derails him, or the Chiefs kind of fall apart, maybe Andy Reid steps down or some talk about he might retire and then the new regime isn't nearly as good, whatever. Unless there's some external change, I can't see Mahomes finishing out of the top five of the best quarterbacks. You know, I mean, I you know, clearly you have Montana, and clearly you have Brady. And then, you know, people are going to haggle over who's next. Is it Peyton Manning? Is it John Elway? But he is entering that conversation for sure. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought that this last game, I can't say I remember vividly all the other Super Bowl wins for the Kansas City Chiefs, but this game, where I really felt like Patrick Mahomes said, you know what, climb on the back, I'm going to get the job done. And when I say that, he did it with his legs. I mean, there was that fourth down call where, I mean, he had an option to throw it to Kelsey, and he kept it, and he ran for, I think, 20-plus yards. I was amazed by how well he played down the stretch, and I shouldn't be amazed because the guy's done it time and time again, but we've said it all season. He's doing it with a cast of characters that's not what we're used to. There's no Tyreek Hill. You know, I mean, and Isaiah Pacheco is a good running back, but he's not a great running back.
Right.
He has one guy, Travis Kelce, who was held in check for almost the entire first half, had a good second half, but I was just shocked. He's absolutely entering that rarefied air of quarterbacks. And I agree with you. Where do we ever point to and say, look, this is going to derail his career? We said that with Tyreek Hill left. We said that when they struggled in 2023. And they won the damn Super Bowl again.
Yeah. I thought Justin Reed's comments were interesting. He said when Chris Jones pressured Brock Purdy on the 3rd-and-4 that San Francisco had in overtime, down in the red zone, and forced an incompletion, and that brought up 4th-and-4, and he saw the field goal unit trotting out for San Francisco, he said he turned to Chris Jones and said, you just won us the football game, because he knew that when they kicked the field goal and you know, San Francisco kicked the ball back to Kansas City, that Mahomes was going down the field to score. I thought that was fascinating. It's still a tie game. San Francisco's about to kick the field goal to take the lead, and already Justin Reed's like, it's over.
Yeah. No, that's pretty awesome. And I want to ask you about Brock Purdy quickly before we go to the last topic here. I was impressed with Brock Purdy. He's poised. Definitely probably was confused a little bit, but Spagnuolo would do that to a lot of quarterbacks. I think there's a lot of 49er faithful that have kind of, they might be outwardly saying, oh, he can't win the big one or something like that. And they might want Kirk Cousins this offseason because they know the relationship with Kyle Shanahan dating back to Washington. But what's your take on Brock Purdy in that game?
I'm a believer, man. I know Pez thinks he's a fraud. He likes to say Purdy's a fraud, but I think that he's a great fit for that offense. He's been increasingly, throughout these playoffs, impressive with his legs and the way that he's moved about the pocket and him scrambling. And when he adds that element to his game, because he's already accurate, he's already got really good poise. There was one play there where Kansas City brought like an overload blitz from his right. And, you know, he really very, very deftly just sort of slid left into the pocket, no panic, kept his eyes down the field, and hit, I think, Brandon Ayuk on a crossing route for about an 18, 19 yard gain. And I thought to myself, man, that's a veteran move. That's the move of a guy who really feels comfortable in the pocket, but more than that, knows what to expect. Oh, pressure in my face from the right, slide left, hit my crossing route, move on, play the next play. And again, I just think he looks like a guy who belongs.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, Brock Purdy can't. The dude is a 7th round draft pick. He's been the NFC championship game. He got hurt, and then he got to get to the Super Bowl. I don't know how any 49er fan can sit there and say, we want someone better I think that he's only going to get better. And I think that 49ers team is going to be better off for it because he's on that really cheap rookie deal. They're going to be able to continue to add pieces. It's going to be interesting to watch. That's a good segue into our final topic here. The Vegas, the sports books are already at it. They've already got the odds out for 2024, 2025. And so here's what they are, because I wrote this for SteelCurtainNetwork.com. San Fran, odds on winner to win it next year at plus 550. Kansas City, plus 650. Then the Ravens at plus 900. Bills, plus 1,000. Lions, plus 1,200. Bengals, plus 1,300. And then you get into the Dolphins at plus 17. Eagles, Packers, Cowboys, all plus 2,000. So the question is, what is your way too early prediction for next season's Super Bowl?
Pittsburgh Steelers, Jeff.
Yeah.
all right, now I got to get my straight face on after that one. Unless Reed steps down, I have a hard time.
They say he's coming back. They say he's coming back. Okay. That's what I'm reading. Yeah.
Then I'm going to ride with the Chiefs until somebody proves it wrong. I just feel like right now, nobody's really got an answer yet for what they do. I mean, they've looked bad at times. There was a stretch in the middle of the season where everybody's like, oh, they're mortal. But one thing that's scary about them, they're young. That's a young football team, and they've got some cap money. They haven't destroyed themselves with the salary cap. And now Mahomes is talking about doing some kind of Tom Brady deal where he restructures his contract to give him some money back to work with. They've got a great coaching staff. They got the best quarterback on the planet. This was a year where they shouldn't have won the Super Bowl. This was a down year. There was an article on The Athletic today that said, you know, for all these people who do advanced stats, that as far as EPA goes, this was the 29th best Chiefs team in Kansas City Chiefs history. And so what does that mean? That means like this was not a Chiefs team that was expected to be great, and yet they won it all again, man. And so with an offseason to kind of rebound, stock up, get a little better at the skill positions, I don't know. They're scary to me.
It is going to be tough. I'm going to go with, I don't think 49ers get back. And I don't think Kansas City does either. I'm going to go with, and this is, no, I can't go with the division team. We'll say Buffalo. No, not Buffalo, because they're not in good cap situation. Kansas City does get back, as I'm talking myself through this. Kansas City gets back, but let's say it's Kansas City Philly rematch. I think that would be fun to watch, and that would be it would be a good ratings as well. So that's where I'll go with. Now, you wanted to finish this up talking about Andy Reid. No player profile. This is a coach profile. Go ahead. I'll let you do the honors.
Well, Andy Reid, I'm very familiar with him. He was the coach in Philadelphia for a long time. I listened to Eagles fans for years badmouth Andy Reid as the guy who can't win the big one. He can get you there, but he'll never win the big one. And anytime you get a generational quarterback, that helps for you to win the big one. Obviously, Bill Belichick knows that. Obviously, the Steelers did well with Ben Roethlisberger. You get a guy, again, a Peyton Manning, and now Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that'll certainly make you a better coach. There's nothing that helps a coach look better than great players. But Andy Reid's also figured some stuff out. And he's really kind of, I wouldn't say he's reinvented himself as a play caller, because he was doing some pretty interesting things back in Philadelphia when he had Donovan McNabb. He was ahead of the curve a little bit. One of the first guys to really start to do some read option stuff. That wasn't really a thing that was in the NFL. Reed brought some of that to Philadelphia. But I just think he's such a masterful play caller right now. I mean, you look at the two most crucial plays of the game. When Kansas City got the ball back in overtime, trailing by three, they faced a 4th-and-1, from their own side of the field that they converted when Mahomes ran for about 8 yards. And then obviously the play they ran to score the game-winning touchdown. They were plays in which the defense was put in such a bind, perfect play calls for the moment, anticipating pressure, anticipating coverage, just knowing exactly what to call in those ultimate moments. I mean, that those are calls that I think separate good and great coaches. And Andy Reid has become a great coach because of just the way that he understands the game, but also the way he deals with people. He's a little bit like Mike Tomlin in that you never hear players of his, ex-players of his, say anything bad about him. The only guy I've ever heard say anything bad about Andy Reid was Freddie Mitchell, the old Eagles wide receiver who was permanently disgruntled. But other than that, man, nothing but great things to say about Andy Reid in terms of how he handles players. So I'm glad he's having this moment, right? You know, now he's had enough. Okay, three's enough. It's time for somebody else to win it. You know, preferably somebody in black and gold. Still, man, I'm glad that he after all those years in Philly where he just got bad mouthed for so long, and you know, I mean, fans were terrible, man, calling him Fat Andy and all that stuff. And then he went through those personal issues with his sons. It's nice to see a good guy like Andy Reid be redeemed.
It's interesting how everyone talks about coaching trees, right? The McVay tree, now the Shanahan tree. Like, they all want coaches from that tree. Andy Reid, like you mentioned, has been doing it for a long time, been very successful for a long time, and yet his name never gets brought up as it pertains to, wow, we want that coach from that coaching tree. Like, no one's saying that. Like, the coordinators, Matt Nagy and Spagnuolo now, like, they're just there doing their job. They had Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy leaves. Now he's not coaching anywhere because he got fired from when Dan Quinn takes over the Commanders. But really interesting. I find that very interesting. But Andy Reid, like you said, does it the right way and has been winning for a very long time. There's a lot of stuff to talk about that we didn't even cover. Like, I think the turning point in the game was the muff punt. That to me was that changed everything. That changed everything. Wasn't on Ray McLeod, former Steeler, by the way. Wasn't on him. It hit the up man. So you got to keep that in mind. But Coach, any final thoughts on the Super Bowl before we call it a show?
No, I mean, I just feel as though we're seeing with this Kansas City team something that's kind of unique, which is, I think when Brady peaked in New England and it was clear that their dynasty was over, there was a lot of talk about, we're never going to see another dynasty because of the way the NFL is structured. The draft, the schedule, it's all built against the most successful teams. The league wants parity, et cetera. So really, it was only, a handful of years before that script got flipped in a hurry. Yeah. And I think the big takeaway, of course, is this, man. When you combine great coaching with great quarterback play, the possibility for what the Chiefs are doing, what the Patriots did, that still exists no matter how the league is structured. That is the ultimate combination. There's a lot of teams that have great coaches and great quarterbacks put together in the league. But, man, when you get to the level that Kansas City's at, the best coaches with the best quarterback, you can still build a dynasty.
It is. It's crazy. It's crazy to think about. But for all the listeners out there that might have been a loyal follower of the NFL Whip Around all season, know that this show is not going anywhere. We're going to continue on throughout the offseason to cover things like free agency, rumors, leading up to the NFL draft, and, of course, getting back into training camp and getting ready to do it all over again. So, Coach, it's been a fun season. We're not going anywhere, though. But why don't you tell everyone what's coming up on the call sheet? Because that show's not going anywhere either.
No, not going anywhere at all. Yeah, I mean, we're going to look a little bit at some of the coaching decisions in this Super Bowl. The call sheet's largely about coaching. We'll look at some of the big coaching decisions in this Super Bowl. And then on our call sheet breakdown this week, we're going to do we're calling it the one play breakdown. So I'm actually going to profile two plays, the two plays I just mentioned, the fourth and one call, and then the touchdown to win it by Andy Reid. Two very, very interesting versions of the same play that he got away with again, two Super Bowls in a row, and we'll look at how he did it.
That's awesome. And if you want any of our Steelers coverage, you can find us at the Steel Curtain Network. Anywhere where you get your podcast, search Steel Curtain Network or Steelers. You can find me on Twitter at Jay Hartman, HARTMAN_PIT. Coach, thanks for another good show. We'll talk to you next week. Take it easy.
Yes, sir.